Thanks, Nathan, and thanks everybody here for being here today. So the way we're going to do this, Scott and I are going to sort of tag team this presentation. I'm going to start out by providing a background and sort of context for why we're doing this evaluation, and he'll be talking about some of the data points we're collecting. And then it will come back to me to do some wrap-up and conclusion, so bear with us for a little back and forth here. But we're going to be talking about understanding the feedback session, a process evaluation of AFIX in Oregon. So very brief background, AFIX has been part of or been in practice in Oregon since 2000. It was piloted in 2000 and had actively been part of the program since 2001. There are currently 7 health educators who conduct visits and spend up to 30% of their time working with providers on vaccine-related issues. So this includes AFIX visits, but also VFC visits and fielding calls from providers to answer questions about vaccine-related issues. So that's a fair amount of time to be talking about when you look at 7 staff members, up to 30% of time focusing on this type of activity. And so there were a lot of reasons why it was important to look at AFIX and do an evaluation. And some of those reasons include just that fact that there are health educators spending that much time working with providers, and it makes a lot of sense to make sure the time that they're spending is as effective as possible to improving immunization practices. Another reason for doing an evaluation is that while Oregon has done a lot of looking at assessment rates and trying to figure out whether or not they've improved as a result of AFIX visits, there's not really been a previous process evaluation of exactly what it is about AFIX that works. And even in the broader literature, I've seen a lot of presentations about AFIX at the state level, but very few publications that really address what it is about AFIX that works. So we thought this is a really great opportunity to look at the program. It's been around for upwards of 9 years, and look at it and try to figure out what it is about AFIX that we feel is really important and contributes to improving immunization practice. So I have a slide here that's looking at just describing the assessment and feedback, also exchange portions of the AFIX visit. And for those of you who, I think everybody here is familiar with AFIX, but it's a quality assurance program to improve immunization practices. And the way that they are done in Oregon is that the health educator will conduct an assessment of up-to-date rates of every child within a clinic, and using shot records that are submitted to ALERT, which is the Oregon IIS. The feedback exchange, so feedback sessions, delivering that information back to the providers and having discussion about improvement at the practice level, can occur on a one-to-one session. So a health educator will meet with clinical staff, invite them to a discussion and discuss the up-to-date rates, missed opportunity rates, et cetera, and discuss about strategies of improving those rates. It can be so a one-on-one session, one-on-one being the clinic to the health educator, or it can be an exchange session where they'll do a regional meeting and a group of providers will come and meet with the health educator to discuss. At that point, it becomes a less specific conversation, a more general one about regional practices. And then it can also be a mailed assessment, which is not the preferential mode of delivery for a feedback session, but sometimes it's just the way it has to happen. And you'll mail the results in a report back to the clinic for their review. So the discussion about how to evaluate the feedback session, and that's the particular piece of this that we're going to talk about, although up-to-date rates, of course, will come in because assessment is a critical piece of AFIX. We were trying to have a conversation about what it is exactly we wanted to collect and what occurs at a feedback session. So the fields that we decided to systematically start collecting, and this conversation began in Oregon before I was even there, but has been ongoing since I started with Oregon in June, but was to look at the contact type, so looking again at feedback method. So was it in person, was it an exchange methodology, or was it a mailed assessment that was returned to a clinic? And then to look at the goals. So part of the strategy of the health educator is, as many people here would know, go to the clinic and work with the providers, but to try to get the staff to actually set goals of their own about how they may choose to improve practices or to address issues that may have come up in the assessment. So to start collecting systematically any goals that were set by the clinic during those feedback sessions, and then also to document suggestions that the health educator may have made for the clinic to think about trying to do. So things like if they wanted to initiate a reminder or a recall effort, those kinds of suggestions, they start to document systematically. And then the next piece was clinical role of attendee. And this is a conversation I'm sure many people have had about who is it that you need to have attend a feedback session? Who are the critical people to have involved? And sometimes it's just whoever's there and whoever can be there. But sometimes there are, you know, specific efforts made to reach out to certain types of clinical staff to make sure they participate. And so we decided to start collecting clinical role of attendee and seeing if we see any patterns of behavior and type of participation. And then the 6-month follow-up, which is something we are not going to be able to report on today, but is something that we decided was a really critical part of seeing whether or not you know, you have participants at a clinic who decide to set goals, you make suggestions, but whether or not they get implemented is something you have to wait and find out. And in order to do that, you need to have a 6-month follow-up visit or at least contact with that provider site to see exactly what they've decided to implement as a result of that session. So these are the fields that we decided to collect, and what we're going to do is report some very preliminary results. This study's started, you know, several months in the works and will continue to, is ongoing, so these are interim results. And so I'm going to turn it to Scott Jeffries now to talk a little bit about the database he created for collecting this information and some preliminary analysis.
Okay, thank you, Holly. Thank you, Nathan. And let's take a look at some of our data. So first of all, this is the database that I developed. It's a very simple access database. I know just enough about access to be dangerous. But this is when the health educators return from their AFIC sessions. They have attendance sheets and they have other notes that they've kept about the feedback, which is basically most of the points that Holly just listed. And so they just log into this database and enter it all in there. And I don't think we need to go over every field in here. I just wanted to show you what that looks like. And so a look at the types of contact that we've had. She mentioned the three types of contact. We've had 92 visits with 74 clinics, so there have been some repeat attenders, which are the ones we're really going to be looking at. And you see there's been a pretty even split between the three different types with less of an emphasis on the exchange. And as Holly indicated, we've only made 6 of our 92 6-month follow-ups so far, and like everything else we haven't accomplished in the last year, we're blaming that on H1N1. Looking at some of the clinical roles of attendees, when we do the feedback sessions, we pass around a sign-in sheet. The attendees give their name and their position, and it's just open-ended. And as we were looking at the data, we decided that it wasn't really telling us what we wanted to know. So we made one attempt to go and just group them all into more broader categories that maybe get more at the nature of their involvement in the clinic. And so you can see that the large plurality of attendees are non-licensed clinicians, which you know, I always forget something when I do something, so I forgot my notes on this slide, but if I remember correctly, these non-licensed clinicians are MAs and CMAs and things like that. And then we have the next largest categories are the licensed clinicians, whether or not they have prescription privileges. So the prescribing clinicians would be the doctors, the non-prescribing clinicians would be the RNs and the LPNs. And then we have a smaller number of ancillary, which we consider to be health educators or lab workers. We have management, which is anyone who indicated that they have some sort of management role. They're a clinic manager, they're an office manager, and we want to know if maybe that management position maybe gives them more of an impact on clinical practices. And then the smallest group are the non-clinical administrative, which are the front desk and the billing, the receptionists. And we actually hypothesized that these people might have a pretty big impact on immunization practices because they're the ones that are scheduling patients to come back for more shots. And things like that. So they might actually have a really valuable impact. And just looking at the average number of attendees per session, there were 12 attendees per clinic at a feedback, which is good. We're getting a nice cross-section of the clinic. And obviously more at the exchanges because there are more clinics at the exchanges. We didn't look at how many clinics attend the average exchange, but even if it's 2, we're seeing fewer representatives from each clinic at the exchanges, which could make them less valuable. So looking at setting goals, obviously there is much more goal setting going on at the in-person feedbacks because they're very face-to-face. It's the health educator, probably another member of our staff, possibly me, and then a large number of their clinicians, and we're talking about what's going on at their clinic. And so goals are sort of a natural byproduct of those discussions. The exchanges are much less because they're not focused so much on the individual clinical practices as they are about more regional issues. And so you don't really get down to sort of the nitty-gritty of what each individual clinic does. We took a just basic look at some of the top goals that are being set, and the top two are assessing up-to-date status of every child at visits, which kind of ties in with the number 3, which is forecasting using our IIS. You know, we find that a lot of clinicians tend to rely on their memory to figure out which shots are due when our IIS has a forecaster built in. So we try to train them to actually use that, and they're often surprised that they are forgetting vaccines. Conducting recalls is a big one. We can offer that service to them. We can go into our immunization registry and pull out lists of kids that need to be recalled. Or if they have an electronic health record, they can do that themselves. Having parents bring the records, I don't remember that bullet point when I put that slide together, so I think Holly might have added that, but or maybe I was just putting that together too quickly, I didn't even notice. So let's look at some data, because this is, of course, the outcome that we're looking for is improvement. So we have a really small sample of clinics right now. We're just in the beginning of this analysis, so we can't really say a lot. And, you know, there's been a lot of studies that look like this, where you take a clinic before AFIX and you take clinics after AFIX and their numbers go up, and it's good. Everyone says, great, AFIX works, but we don't really know why, and we're just now getting at that question. And we don't have enough numbers to really look at that yet, but this is a nice, you know, a promising look at what's going on. These are all the clinics. We've been recording this data since early 2008. So we basically had 2 years of data. So this is every clinic that participated in both 2008 and 2009. The blue bars were their average rates in 2008, and the orange bars were their average improvements. And promisingly, every antigen went up or, in some small cases, stayed the same. We weren't able to look at overall series rates because of the Hib shortage, which is really driving down our series rates overall. For the most part, you know, the lower the rates were when they started, the more improvement they made, which makes sense. You have more room for improvement. And of course, the notable exception is the fourth DTaP, and I think anyone who is involved in immunization in any ways know how hard that fourth DTaP is to get into kids. And so now, to look at maybe more of a bigger picture, this is from a separate analysis, but this is my favorite graph. This is looking back at every AFIX assessment that we've conducted since the beginning of time, or 2001, as it were. And a look at how their rates changed with each successive annual assessment that they did. And the blue bar is their up-to-date rate at 24 months, and the orange bar is the kids who were up-to-date, but they were late. They were up-to-date between 24 and 36 months. And you can see everyone starts at zero, and then when we do the second assessment, we see the late up-to-date rate go up by about 2%, while the up-to-date rate doesn't change. And that makes a lot of sense, because when we go in and we start identifying some of the issues with their practice, one of the main things that comes out of it is figuring out all the kids that need just one shot or two shots or a few shots to catch up. And in the next year, they do really well at getting those kids caught up, and it boosts their rates by about 2%. And then what's good is that they don't make that a habit. You see like some of the more systematic changes taking place, and their on-time up-to-date rate goes up by about 10% with the fourth assessment, while their late up-to-date rate actually declines below the baseline level. So we're using this as just sort of a frame. This is a separate group of clinics than the ones that were in this database we've been talking about. But we think these are the kinds of things that we're going to expect to see in coming years, and we're really looking forward to being able to break these sort of trends down by the feedback characteristics. And so with that, I'm going to pass it back to Holly for some conclusions.
Okay, thanks, Scott. So I think that these data elements are really important to look at, but I want to pull it back and switch gears a little bit and go back to the part of the process evaluation that was focusing on the feedback session itself and talk about a little bit about some of the questions that have come up as we look at these interim results. One of the discussions that came up was about capturing clinical role of attendees at the feedback session. And as we were looking at the long list of different types of credentials people had that were attending the session, so the LPNs, the MAs, the nurse managers, and so on, and probably 50 different categories of provider type, it occurred to us that we're not really sure the meaning of that information, and that the problem with that is that at every clinic there are different people who have different levels of authority at the clinic level. And so the question we really wanted to get at was, are the people that are attending the feedback session the people that have decision-making authority at the clinic level? And so some of the questions we started to ask were, well, maybe we were asking the wrong question at that feedback session, and maybe when we circulate the attendance sheet at these feedback sessions, maybe we should instead be asking the people attending whether or not they vaccinate clients, whether they manage vaccine, if they're responsible for inputting data into the Oregon IAS system? Are they somebody who actually makes decisions regarding clinical processes? And then do you participate in discussions about your clinic's organizational structure? So this is a discussion we're having. Nobody likes to change evaluation measures mid-evaluation, not a very good practice. However, if you're not getting the information you need, it's important to go back and look at those questions and make sure it's going to be something meaningful that you can use and talk about. So this is the discussion we're having now, and if people have thoughts about that, I'd certainly be interested in hearing that. So some interim conclusions based on that data. What is promising for us is that 64% of feedback sessions are occurring in person. However, if you may recall that Scott showed you, about half of those are in exchange mode, and half of those are actually direct feedback sessions with health educator and individual clinic staff. And so while exchange sessions are a good mode of getting information back to a lot of people, you don't get into the specifics of the clinic in those discussions, and they're broader strokes, conversations about AFIX. So, you know, it may be important for us to really isolate those ones where you have a feedback in person with just one clinical staff present. The second bullet here, the majority of feedback attendees are non-licensed clinicians. That's probably not surprising to people because the majority of people giving vaccines, at least in the state of Oregon, are typically non-licensed clinicians. But again, looking at the role of a feedback of the person, whether or not we're getting the right information is something we need to think about more. So when thinking about goals being set, I think health educators are emphasizing more and more the importance of having our attendees set their own goals, because as for theories of behavior change, I think it's pretty common idea that people setting their own goals as opposed to setting them for them are probably more effective in them trying to achieve them. So the fact that people are trying harder to get the staff to be invested in those decisions is something we're working toward, and we're seeing movement in that direction, which is nice. And the goals that are typically being focused on are the use of reminder recall. I think specifically 15-month recalls were something people discussed pretty frequently. The importance of checking immunization history at every single visit for a child. And then again, as Scott mentioned, the utilization of an IIS system at the clinic level is something else that we're trying to monitor and get a sense of. The 6-month follow-up session is something that's going to be really valuable to us to get a full picture of what's going on and whether or not we've been effective in getting information out and whether practices are adopting behavior change. And then the nice graphs that Scott was able to present looking at up-to-date rates, while that wasn't the main focus of this evaluation, it's really nice to be able to look at these feedback characteristics and eventually, as he said, look at up-to-date rates and sort of stratify and look at different feedback characteristics and get a sense of what's making a difference at the clinic level. So some acknowledgments. We want to thank Nathan for his involvement in helping sort of steward this evaluation process and the staff at Oregon Immunization Program who've been involved throughout to help collect these data points. Thank you.